Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the WTF1 podcast, Race 1000 edition. As you can probably tell, I am not Matt Gallagher. I'm Jess, but Matt's currently on holiday, so you're stuck with me hosting for this week's podcast.
Very confused audio listeners.
I know, right? I
can't see you.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. Matt hasn't gone through some
he's not
decisions.
Mourning Charles' unfortunate race. He is genuinely on holiday.
Yeah, I think he wasn't he out watching the Masters in America, watching Tiger Woods win.
So the wrong sport, but we'll let him off.
Yeah, we'll let him off this one time. So today I'm joined by a regular now on the WTF1 podcast, Mr. Dan Thorne.
Yes, I am unfortunately regular, getting roped into this. No, it's good fun. I'm enjoying it.
Good. And then also returning is the founder.
Thank you. What a race to return to.
I know.
Really excited about this riveting Grand Prix that I've blessed everyone with my return for. So
you've
be good.
You've come back for a good one.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of which, should we dive straight into our fans' three-word race review?
All those really positive three-word race reviews, yeah.
Yes, for hashtag race 1000, which I don't know if you noticed, it was race 1000?
It was.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I'd known that.
So let's start with the fans, as we said. So we have one for, and I swear, I now know what Matty goes through when we have to read out fans' handles, because Malone Cohen.
I'm going to go with Malone Cohen. When I was putting him down, I was like, are you going to be okay with his name?
Deliberately chosen the most difficult to read.
So at Malone Cohen says, nothing to see. MRCJ Lambert, not very good. Tim _ Stalter, king of boring. I wonder who the king is.
Was that meant to be kind of boring or king of boring?
I'd say maybe kind of boring. But anyway, let's stick with king of boring. Because that sounds a bit more epic. and finally, Torn _VZ says, waste of time. So again,
pretty savage race review.
It was, but I think in some cases it's fair. I think the hype around it maybe led it up to a bit of a failure. Like anything less than spectacular, especially coming off Bahrain, it was probably going to be a bit of a tough one to follow. But let's jump in, Tommy, with your three-word race review, which is kind of an answer to those those fan three-word race reviews.
Mine is, it's one race, as in chill out, guys. That could also be the three-word race review.
Chill out, guys.
Chill out, guys.
Okay.
Let's be honest, the race wasn't very good. Not a lot happened. Very little on-track action. Even the midfield, it was really weird because China is normally a pretty good race, right? It's just a bit disappointing. But I heard a lot of people after the race, and we get a lot of comments, you know, like, F1 is dead. Like, racing's over. It was so much better back in the day. And, I mean, realistically, we've just had Bahrain the race before where, you know, Charles almost won. It was a really exciting race. And, you know, like, just chill out a little bit. I'm sure we'll have plenty of good races. It was just unfortunate that the 1000th race was a bit of a crap one.
Yeah. I mean, every series has it. You know, like I watched IndyCar at the weekend, you know, kind of hoping for like, oh yeah, the Grand Prix wasn't that great. Kind of hoping for a bit of IndyCar craziness. And that was a bit unspectacular as well. It's just the way motorsport is sometimes.
Yeah. And I was thinking actually, because I watched the highlights of the 2018 race and yes, okay, it probably had more action than this year's race. But actually, if the Toro Rossos hadn't have smashed into each other, it probably would have just played out as it stood. I remember watching and being like, oh, this is getting a bit boring. And then we had the Toro Rosso collision, safety car, and all hell broke loose. And it actually turned out everyone was like, oh my God, this is an amazing race.
It seems like this era of F1 is like that, where even like we were talking about Baku, like could be really good again. But if you think back to Baku last year, it wasn't a crazy race until you had that safety car. So like, until you get that kind of point where it changed, that's when the crazy races sort of happen. But unfortunately, we just never got that. But yeah, it was a big over-exaggeration, I think, for the race. Like, if Charles Leclerc had won that race and it had been a great race, everyone would be like, you know, what a great sport it is. We've got new faces in and like the future's looking really bright. And that could happen in Baku. You know, like Charles could win in Baku and everyone would be, you know, saying how great F1 is. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly that. And a lot of people were saying actually that the formation lap had more action than the actual race.
I missed that. I went to the toilet.
No!
So literally the only good bit of the race, I was like, I'll go to the toilet. Nothing will happen on the parade lap. Get back for the start of the race and missed the most exciting lap of the entire Grand Prix.
So we had two cars spin on the formation lap, which is not something I think I can ever remember or recall seeing, that having two cars spin.
Yeah, I can't remember two. I can remember one a few times.
Yeah.
But for two cars to do it is slightly unusual. I mean, like sometimes you get races that are so good where you forget some of the epic moments that have happened. But I think this race was so bad that I'd even totally forgotten that there had been spins on the warm-up lap because it had just been overridden by just grey mush in my head.
Kubica had quite a funny quote, didn't he, that was like the most exciting part of the race was when I spun on the formation lap. And it's quite funny, that was his kind of review of the race, but also probably many fans' reviews of the race as well, because it was like the main thing.
So speaking of what fans were saying, we had a couple of questions in. So little_MLO says, do you wish any other circuit had hosted the 1000th race?
Not really. It doesn't really bother me, to be honest. I mean, you look back at some of the other milestone races, you had Singapore with Crashgate, Bahrain was the 900th. We had that epic battle between Rosberg and Hamilton.
If the race had been good, it'd been fine.
Yeah, exactly. But like for some of the like the events at the weekend, like maybe historic races or like displays and stuff like that, it might have been better if it was at Silverstone or something. But I don't think you can just change the calendar just to have the 1000th race be somewhere totally unsuitable.
I mean, that was all... I have so many three-word race reviews that maybe it's just because I've not been on the podcast for a while. But another one of mine was probably going to be like, why no festival? F1 promised this big festival to celebrate the 1000th race, and all you got was just a logo in the corner.
Yeah.
Like Crofty said it at the start when the lights came out. Where was the classic displays? Like Damon Hill drove Graham Hill's Lotus. I only saw that on his own Instagram.
Yeah. And there was a special liveried up Heritage F1 car as well.
But like,
didn't do much.
Didn't really see that. I think you kind of ruined it with, I said this to you before, you kind of ruined it with your April Fool, which I started to fall for because I was on holiday. I had no idea what day it was. And I went and I was like, oh, that's cool. They're doing like special liveries for the race and like they're doing all this stuff. And then it obviously got progressively more stupid as it went along. And I was like, what date is it? Oh, it's 1st of April.
Dan, just share a few snippets from that article.
Well, there was some like slightly sensible stuff. So you had, you know, like classic liveries, like displays of historic cars, but then it got a bit more stupid. Like there would be 1,000 lights counting down to the start and like a foot race between all the drive, like every F1 driver to existed and stuff like that. And it was you know, it was the sort of thing where you kind of got to the end and was like, I kind of wish that was true. But
I think the thing about the race that maybe made it a little more dull, and I put something on Twitter about it on the WTF1 account, was you're almost expecting some kind of like, because it's the 1000th race, there's no way it could be bad. And as it got like halfway through the race, you're almost expecting like, oh, where's like the track suddenly becomes lava, or like, you know, like you have to have square wheels for two laps or something stupid. But it was just, unfortunately, just a bit of a dud race.
Yeah, I think for me, it was, I don't really understand why there was any, I mean, 1,000 races, and obviously there was a big debate actually as to whether it was actually the 1,000th race or the 1,000th world championship event, as everyone was getting very upset about on Twitter. Shock. Yeah. But it's a great milestone to have. And I think it's amazing to see the history. That's, I think that's the biggest thing that I loved about the entire lead up was that, you know, F1 played historic races live on its YouTube and Facebook pages. We kind of had an excuse to look back at some of the greats and kind of remind ourselves of how far the sport's come. And that I really liked about it. But the race itself, for me, it was like it was, the fact that it was the 1,000th race is a footnote. It's not
I think the whole race weekend didn't seem to have anything like you
but I
think you mentioned all that stuff, and yeah, there was a lot on like social media and stuff about like classic races and oh how great Ayrton Senna was and Alan Prost and all this kind of stuff. But the race itself, there was no like pre-race, maybe something.
There was that F1 put together a one-off intro VT.
Yeah.
That was really cool. It kind of like inspired nostalgia
good.
Like in the lead up, and every F1 fan gets hyped about the intro and the build up. And anyway, so I think that was a nice thing to add in. It might have been nice to have shown some of those laps, as you say, of like Damon Hill and Graham Hill's car and some more. I was expecting maybe like a heritage race. But do you know what? Like, I don't think it. I feel like people are getting upset over it. Whereas it's just another race.
Yeah. It's one race. You know? That's my three-word
we're going,
review.
Yeah, we're going. We're going stop it with your three-word race reviews, Tommy. You've had your go.
I need more.
You know, we're going to Baku in a couple of weeks, and that's race 1001. You know, the it's going to keep going. I think it's. I mean, yeah, it's
not going to lose sleep over it.
Exactly that. And I'm not going to get upset that there wasn't that much done about it, because there's so much, especially in the era of Liberty Media, there's been so much like pomp and circumstance and like overhyping and media stuff that actually sometimes I get a little bit blinded by it. So I'm actually glad that there wasn't that much. Personally,
I mean, you love Monaco. So when we get to Monaco, let you know.
Not just yet. But one thing that people did spot was, considering it's meant to be a special race, the camera work was shocking to say the least. Again, I don't think I've ever seen it be that bad.
That was really strange. Like the first time it happened, it was always the same sort of thing. Like cars going through the first couple of corners, and then it would cut back to the pit straight in quite a shaky way. And the first time it happened, I was like, oh, someone's gone off at the last corner and they're like trying to find the crash car or something. But then it was just, oh no, it's just Ricardo and Perez coming down the straight. And then it happened again and again and again.
Yeah.
And it's like, what is this? Is the director just a really big Perez fan? But there was a comment, I can't remember where it was. Someone suggested it might have been on the WTF1 Instagram, where it was the director was, there was obviously some sort of error where instead of cutting to the straight after the first complex, they were going to the pit straight by mistake.
And it was like the same mistake every single time. Like it wasn't just like shoddy camera work everywhere. It was like as soon as they came round into turn three, you were ready for like that next shot, and it would cut back to the camera on the pit straight that wasn't ready to be filming cars. So you just had it as some kind of like jaunty angle as some of the midfield were coming by.
Yeah, I think one thing it did for me was it was remind me of how tough it is to film cars moving at over 200 miles an hour. But also that live TV, like you have one job, and that is to cut.
Maybe that was F1's special thing for the 1000th race. It's like, let's remind everyone how fast F1 cars are by not being able to film them very well.
It reminds me of like, it wasn't that long ago, probably like in the early 2000s when it still used to be the local broadcaster who would control the camera work. So at like Imola, it would always just focus on the Ferraris and it would just be like a little bit shoddy. Like it still is at Monaco sometimes. Yeah. But
well, Monaco, do they still have that? Is that a thing?
I think so. It used to be like an agreement with Bernie and the organisers. So I don't know if it still
Monaco had its own TV director and it was normally pretty poor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I think we can all agree that the build-up was a bit lackluster and the camera work wasn't that great. But let's actually talk about what happened in the race itself.
Oh, yeah.
So, sorry, Dan, I'm going to cut in before you. I'm going to go with my three-word race review, Tommy's, which was unfair Kvyat penalty.
Agreed.
Yes, someone actually agrees with
totally
me on this
agree.
Podcast.
I mean, the thing is with that is you think he got a drive-through penalty for basically making a mistake in a corner, having to correct the car, which then collided with two McLarens. Last year, Verstappen speared into the side of Vettel, spun him round, and only got a 10-second penalty.
Exactly.
So that's like...
I think it was a harsh penalty.
I think it should have been penalised, maybe like 5 or 10 seconds, but a drive-through was a bit...
Okay, ridiculous. I agree with you there. Like, I think some people were saying it wasn't his fault, but I think if you look back, he did have quite a swapper on and then sort of speared, not as dramatic. It's the kind of thing that happens in a first lap. But I think
after he had the oversteering moment, he could have kept tighter and avoided it, but he didn't.
And they pinched Sainz, him and Lando.
Yeah, just like a bad luck situation sort of thing.
I think that's it. And I think everybody was talking. I think Lando actually afterwards said, from his perspective, it was a racing incident. And I agree, because if you watch all the onboards, actually the best onboard to watch from is Strolls, who was behind this all happening. But if you watch, you know, I mean, Lando loves to test track limits. He loves to run over the curb, which I think, you know, is fine. Like he wasn't over the white line, so technically he's still within track limits. But he was running wide, and then came, as he was trying to rejoin to make sure that he was back on track, he pinches Sainz, who then gets pinched by Kvyat's oversteer moment. So, yeah, Sainz is kind of like maybe, and you can see Sainz locks up. So you have all these things happening simultaneously.
Sainz was braking because he was like, God, I'm going
to
get
pinched. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So Sainz is trying to back out. Kvyat has no control, always trying to gain control over his car again. And Lando's coming back onto track whilst all of this is happening. So, you know, if any one of those moments had happened individually, you probably wouldn't have had that much of a collision, or maybe Kvyat would have slid into the side of Sainz, but it wouldn't have been as spectacular as it actually ended up with Lando flying into the air, which was really unfortunate because that completely wiped the McLarens out, to be honest. And the fact that there wasn't a safety car when they pitted meant that they didn't gain anything. It was literally just joining the back of the pack, unfortunately. But
the only thing Lando gained was a meme on social media.
Yeah, but
bit of an old meme.
It was an old meme. I mean, everyone seems to love it, and it's great. I think
the fact that a Formula One driver is putting a meme of his own crash on Instagram is very much feels like a new era of drivers, doesn't it?
Yeah, but next time, Lando, give us a shout. We'll tell you if it's an old meme or not. Save you from that embarrassment. No, I'm joking. It was good. It was all good fun. It's all good fun. But yeah, okay. So we're all agreed then that shouldn't have been a drive-through penalty.
No, it was too harsh of a penalty. And I think one of the key points is that Kvyat feels, and a lot of people feel, that his previous reputation has caused the stewards to go, oh, it's the torpedo.
Kvyat's involved.
Yeah, Kvyat's involved. It must be his fault. Give him a big spank.
I would love to have known what
the reasoning
that stewarding process and how they came to that reasoning, because the stewards have access, as I was told when I went to the conference in Geneva a few months ago, they have access to an amazing data bank of every incident, every corner in every race that they ever won. So they can basically pick up any precedent before and say, okay, what was given in this incident? Can we make it fair? So I don't know of any other, like, that seemed, as soon as they said a drive-through penalty, I was like, that is
for a lap one incident.
Thing is as well,
that is so harsh.
In Bahrain, there was that incident between Stroll and Grosjean as well, which looked a lot more, that wasn't given a penalty, but it looked just kind of like Stroll just sort of squeezed into Grosjean and knocked him off. That, it would have been made more sense to me if that had got a penalty and this hadn't, rather than the other way around. So it's just a bit more inconsistency by the looks of it.
Yeah.
Inconsistent again.
Yeah. Again, seems to be a common thread when we're talking about penalties. But so after all that happened, obviously we settled down, had a few laps, and then Dan's three-word race review, we had this happen.
Ferrari's futile fumble.
Oh,
yeah. Do you want to dive a little bit into what you mean by that?
Well, it's obviously the team orders between Vettel and Leclerc, and Vettel looked quicker when he was behind Leclerc, who got him off the start, and obviously, as any driver does, says, I'm quicker, let me ahead. Ferrari gave Leclerc the chance to speed up, I will let him through, and then it looked to me like he did pull away a little bit, but then the call came to let him through, and Charles came over the radio and said, but I've done what you asked me to, sort of thing. Then Vettel got ahead and didn't pull away and was just
He locked up twice, didn't he? Trying to get away.
Yeah, turn 14. Yeah. Locked up twice big time.
And it left Charles in the kind of danger zone of Verstappen as well.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It was.
Do you think they did that because they had done the same but in reverse in Bahrain?
No, I think personally it's just a little bit clumsy of Ferrari. Like, this is the first time in a long, long time they've had two top drivers who theoretically have equal status and can challenge each other, but Ferrari doesn't know how to manage that, whereas Mercedes has had years of doing it with Rosberg and Hamilton and now occasionally Bottas and when he's on form. And you don't see other teams making these sort of, like, they don't really know if it's the right call, but they're just sort of doing it because they think it is. It doesn't seem like there's a plan in place.
Mm. I wrote exactly the same thing, that everyone's really going in ham on Ferrari for, like, oh, it's another year and they're already like bottling their strategy. They don't know what to do. And to be fair, like, they're in a very difficult situation where, for the first time, like you say, in a few years, like, when Vettel and Kimi were racing, you pretty much would guarantee that Vettel would always be ahead. So when Raikkonen was ahead in those few incidents, we were on the podcast going, they need to implement team orders. They need to make sure Vettel's getting every point he possibly can get, winning all these races. But now they're in an awkward situation where, you know, Vettel has beaten Leclerc in the first race, and you're like, okay, they're making Leclerc stay behind. The next race, Leclerc was so much quicker and he ignored team orders and went for himself. They're in an awkward situation where we don't really know yet who is going to be their top driver.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And it's difficult to manage because it's two drivers always trying to be on the same part of the racetrack. Like, I genuinely thought it was the right call that for Vettel to be let through, because it looked like he was faster. When he did get ahead, you went, oh, it's just Ferrari don't really have that much pace this weekend, whatever reason that is. But it's funny that you mentioned about Mercedes, actually, because one thing I did write down was, to be fair, like, Mercedes had two drivers, when Mercedes did have two drivers that were challenging each other, no disrespect to Bottas, like, Rosberg and Hamilton were going for the title together.
That's very true, yeah.
They didn't manage that very well.
No, they didn't.
And the only reason they were picking up 1-2s is because their car was so much quicker than everyone else. If you think some of the races, like, one thing that came to mind was where Rosberg went for a ridiculous lunge at turn one in Russia, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, everyone's like, what are you doing? But he finished second anyway because their car was so much quicker than everyone else. So it's not as embarrassing. Whereas if he'd finished sixth, seventh, losing constructors' points to Ferrari, everyone would be going, you need to sort this out.
Which is currently what's happening.
Which is currently what's happening with Ferrari.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they need to get a plan together, I think. Because, I mean, and everyone's very quick to jump in and say team orders should be banned. And without repeating our Russia GP podcast from last year, it's a team sport. Whilst there are individuals in cars on the racetrack, it's a team sport, and the whole team's aim is to get both cars home as high as possible with as many points as possible. So team orders are always going to be necessary. And they don't always get it right, but, you know, they definitely should have the choice to use them if necessary. So
it's easy to say, it's easy to, like, poke fun at Ferrari for, like, ruining the strategy, but from my point of view, I genuinely don't know who they should back for the title. And
I think if you
ask all these fans that are saying, like, oh, Ferrari have screwed, like, yeah, like, I don't, yeah, maybe they're not quick enough.
Yeah.
Simple as that. And Hamilton's got the title, you know, like, he's got a big enough advantage anyway. But Vettel, I don't think Charles is miles ahead of Vettel.
No, not
by any stretch. Like, Charles had that really good race where he was very quick and should have won. But at the same time, you know, like, Vettel outqualified
Charles to me seems a bit more hungry for it, but I think he's probably got a little bit more to prove because he's the young newbie who Ferrari have placed a lot of faith and pressure on. But I was saying this to somebody at the weekend, you know, Charles has got hopefully many more seasons to prove he's top dog. But of course he's going to come into his first season all guns blazing, because that's the kind of racer he is. And Binotto came out afterwards saying actually he's happy that Charles is angry with how that went, because that shows that he bloody wants this. He wants to be number one at Ferrari, and that's what you do want, as we've kind of touched on. I couldn't imagine how difficult that is to manage internally. They're
always trying to be on the same part of the racetrack, and would it have looked even more stupid if they'd gone, oh, actually, Vettel isn't quicker, and then swapped them back, and then everyone would be like, they don't know what they're doing, like they're too busy switching the cars around, like they don't know what to do. And it is such an awkward situation.
Definitely.
Because their two rivals, Red Bull and Mercedes, have clear, like, number one drivers. Whether they don't state that they're number one drivers, they're the better drivers that are always going to be ahead, arguably.
Speaking of Red Bull and the fact that they definitely don't need to worry about team orders right now, shall we have a quick conversation about the Red Bull group, should we say? Because Albon is looking like the golden boy at the moment after the race he had, and he was driver of the day, as voted for by everyone. Did we all agree with that, first off? Driver of the day.
Definitely. I don't think, we'll go into it later, but driver of the day, yes, he did an amazing job, and what a time to do it when Gasly is clearly struggling. What a time for a Toro Rosso driver when a Red Bull driver is struggling to show everyone, because no one rated this guy really.
No,
I think it's a big surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially after his accident in FP3, put him out of quali. That was quite a tank slapper, that was, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was like shades of when Giovinazzi did the same a couple of years ago. It's quite a difficult corner to get right. And it seems like if you get on that AstroTurf too much, you're going round, whether you go in the wall or not, is just like pure luck almost.
Yeah, so pit lane to P10. Not bad.
It was a good drive.
Yeah, it was a good drive.
And it wasn't just, there were a lot of pit lane overtakes, but also he made some moves on the track. Magnussen isn't the easiest guy to overtake. So fair play.
So obviously a lot of the fans, like Yawn_Devlas, is saying, do you think Red Bull should replace Gasly? And I feel like we've had this question every single podcast now, purely based on the fact that Gasly just appears to be nowhere at the moment.
It's too early.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think, I think based on Red Bull's history, it's pretty tempting to go, oh, Helmut Marko is going to come in and go, right, you're out. Gasly, you're demoted back to Toro Rosso. Albon, let's give you a shot because you're looking promising.
Also, at the same time, Verstappen was such a one-off. They put him in that car because Ferrari and Mercedes were like,
we want
this guy. And Red Bull are like, oh God, we need to keep him. And they regardless of how Kvyat, you could argue Kvyat was doing no worse than Gasly is now. That was such an extreme situation where they needed to get Verstappen in the car. Otherwise, they were going to lose him to Mercedes or Ferrari, and they wanted to keep him, obviously. But at the moment, it's too early. Gasly's, three races into a... It is worrying, though. He was, again, so far off.
Yeah.
So far off.
It was what was it? 6 tenths off max in Q2 when he was on the faster tyres or something like that. It was...
Ouch.
He did get the point, though, for fastest lap. But I think the only thing that did was kind of just make the top of the table a little bit more interesting, because...
For me, it showcased just how far the top six are ahead. A few people are Renault are doing pretty well, they're back and stuff, but if Red Bull can make a pit stop just for fun at the end of a race because the gap is so huge, just so they can go for fastest lap, it shows that if anything the top six are just pulling further away.
I think it was bit of a segue, but Ted's notebook returned randomly out of nowhere.
Ted's back.
But he was saying in the notebook that Ricciardo finally got his first points in this race. But he finished 21 seconds behind Gasly. Gasly made three pit stops. and Daniel still finished 21 seconds behind. So it is another example of how far those top guys are away from.
I think they're very much banking on like 2021, aren't they, and hoping that the order.
But I don't think that's
closer.
New information, is it?
No, they've
outwardly come out and said that on a number of occasions. But I think it was still good to see Ricciardo actually having a fairly clean weekend.
Yeah.
Not that we saw him in the entire race. No. I think the camera showed him once, apart from when it was upside down, not ready to film. But yeah, it was good.
Yeah. But another MGUK problem for Renault with Hülkenberg retiring.
Yeah.
Pretty early into the race as well, wasn't it? Lap 17, something like that.
Yeah, it was very early. It doesn't look good, does it? And
especially after the double retirement they had in Bahrain. Yeah,
it's making Red Bull's decision to switch look like the smart move, because, you know, Red Bull and Toro Rosso have run pretty much flawlessly reliability-wise three races into the season already. So
that's quite surprising, actually, because I really expected Red Bull to have a lot more mechanical issues. Not because I ever for a moment thought that all the McLaren Honda stuff was like Honda just being terrible. It's more the fact that like Red Bull are well known for like pushing their car to the limit, especially like Adrian Newey will, you know, want a car that's 25 seconds a lap faster than anything else, even if it blows up in three laps.
But I think they were saying, I think this was being said on the Netflix documentary, that Honda allows a lot more of an input from the teams in terms of the engine development. So the engines are almost being custom made for their cars rather than Renault turning up, dropping an engine to McLaren and going, here you go.
Yeah.
Off you go.
Just a better working relationship, I think, has made it so much better.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, and another retirement for Hülkenberg as well, which is not looking. I mean, his first of this, was it his first, or is he DNF'd already?
In Bahrain.
He did.
Yeah.
So,
what was the problem in Bahrain? Because I was on holiday and missed all the post-race chat.
I think it was
similar, wasn't it?
It was another, so they've apparently got a chronic MGUK problem. MGUK problem. So the kinetic part of the engine is not functioning correctly.
Ouch. Gotta imagine if Red Bull had stuck with them.
Yeah, I know.
Horner versus a beat ball part 10.
Yeah, I don't know if the world could handle that kind of level of ego, really, but there we go. So the other thing that we noticed, Tommy, you were having a lot of fun with this, was after the race finished.
Oh, the best race of all time, as it was said on the screen.
Exactly that. Do you want to tell us a bit more about what happened there, what you noticed?
Yeah, so the cool down room, this is how kind of dull, I guess, the race was, that we were finding anything to talk about. And an unlikely star of the race was someone who appeared on the cool down room, which, as you see, like you know, after the race, you see these tweets that come up that says like, what a mega drive from Charles Leclerc, that's incredible, and blah, blah, blah. But one of them, let me just find it, it was so over the top that I thought it was a bit suspicious. Something like, wow.
It was like, is it race 1000 had everything you could wish for the 1000th race?
Wow, race 1000 was the best F1 race ever.
What?
Here's hoping the next 1000 are just as good. And that appeared on the screen behind Hamilton after he'd won the race in the cool down room, and IGP manager on Twitter, like, I saw it from there, and someone was like, does this say what I think it says? That's a bit weird. So
I mean, there are enthusiastic fans,
and then you're just like, that is just not real, or like, who is saying that anyway? Found the person on Twitter that had tweeted it, and the first interesting thing was the fact that they tweeted that before the race even started. They also tweeted that Bottas had won the race. And, you know, another tweet was something like, congratulations, Bottas, what a drive. This is a race that'll be remembered for a long time. And yeah, I was just thinking, like, this is really weird. And then I noticed in his bio, it said, works for Formula One.
Which it doesn't anymore.
Which it doesn't anymore.
It just says, enjoy motor racing. That's
then,
what it says.
Yeah.
So not even enjoys motor racing, just enjoy motor racing.
And then it became this whole sort of, like, everyone did their best detective work. I think you found something that he was an IT engineer at FOM. Someone else posted something on his Instagram that was like him like ready for the FOM party or something.
So
like my conclusion was, okay, so there's a guy that works for Formula One who's tweeting that that was the best F1 race ever. He works in IT and his tweets are appearing on the screen. Are these even real?
I think what a lot of people, the conclusion that a lot of people came to, which I have to agree with, is that he is responsible for testing the tweet deck as it appears on the screen. And it just so happened that his tweet appeared live.
Yeah.
I don't think his tweets are meant to appear. But I kept thinking, you know, Why are they still there? Because a lot of his old tweets, as you found,
they were like test tweets. Still there. I think they might have been test tweets.
No, exactly that. Yeah. But surely wouldn't you delete them? Because people are going crazy. There's some kind of conspiracy.
I guess he never expected, like when he got back and checked his Twitter notifications.
Literally going crazy.
That's the thing. There was one from Paul Ricard last year or something that said, "Oh, congratulations, Charles, on your first podium, like an incredible career ahead of you." And then someone replied to him at that time saying, What are you talking about? And he said, I just want to get on the screen at the end of a race. So I don't know if he is just genuine, like he works for, that's a coincidence, but he just genuinely wants his tweet on the screen at the end of a race.
Because he wrote it.
Well, he does use all the right hashtags.
And emojis, a lot of emojis.
And a lot of emojis, but
there have been genuine tweets on the screen. I will just say it's not F1 appearing on the screen every time. I have heard some people that have been like, oh my God, my tweet made it onto the screen after the call down run. It was just a really funny situation that you were just like, who is this guy and why is he appearing?
I feel pretty sorry for him, to be honest, because his Twitter's probably blowing up.
Yeah, he must have had a bit of a shock when he got back.
But, I mean, maybe he doesn't even check. Maybe his Twitter is purely for... I looked at his feed. He does tweet occasionally.
About Manchester United.
Dear Apple, at Tim Cook, at Samsung Mobile, what on earth made you think having clicks on the phone every time a key was pressed was a good default setting? Hashtag annoyed.
This poor guy's Twitter is just getting absolutely...
He definitely uses Twitter for the right reasons.
Okay. To have a go at people.
Anyway, it's time to move on to ABCDEF1.
I feel like we need some race rundown style extreme cheesy jingle for that.
Yeah.
Just on a xylophone badly.
Yeah.
We should have a xylophone in the podcast room and just do that.
Oh, we can play the note for each driver that gets it. So the driver gets an A, we can bang the A at the end.
Okay, maybe we introduce that for the next maybe podcast. Maybe we don't. Okay, so let's start off with a team that we've not really spoken about so far.
It's because they're too good.
I know.
They made it look so easy, didn't they?
This is
Williams, yeah?
Yeah, no. So let's start with Lewis Hamilton.
I want to clarify. Can I just clarify
something? Of course.
Because this is my first ABCDEF1, of course.
Oh, of course it is.
This is driver of the weekend, right? This is like a weekend thing, not just a race thing.
We've been doing qualifying. You've been doing qualifying
because I heard you guys mentioning about like, oh, well, he technically wasn't on pole, so you can't.
Yeah, like, I think it's a weekend round.
Obviously, the race takes major priority. Yeah. But you've got to take into account FP2.
It's the big one.
The FP2 performance of George Russell, it's an A. Yeah, okay, cool.
So Lewis Hamilton, what do we think?
A.
Really? A.
Yeah. He was so good in the race that despite...
Bottas didn't have a chance.
Well, interestingly, I mean, I guess we'll come on to this when we grade Bottas, but Bottas was complaining that he got wheel spin off the start line that was directly in front of his box.
Something about the white line or something?
The white line, yeah. Because the white line is like literally inches away from his start box. And he said that his wheels spun on that line. But when, again, Ted's back, and he's featuring twice in this podcast now, when he went down to check out the line, he ran his foot along it and there's no difference in grip
at all. I don't really buy it.
And if you look at the onboard as well, where he wheel spins is like after the line. It's really unusual for
Valtteri Bottas 2.0 world champion 2019 confirmed, isn't it?
I know. I mean, do you know what?
You made a mistake.
I'm so mad that Matty's not here because he baited me on Twitter by saying that...
Everyone went nuts again, didn't they?
Because he qualified. Yeah. I mean, fair enough. His qualifying...
He smashed Hamilton in qualifying.
And yeah.
Well, by 7,000th... Wow. I can't say that. 7,000ths of a second. But I mean, yeah, still, he got pole, right? Yeah. So he turned up qualifying, awesome. And then usually where Lewis is weaker is the start.
Yeah.
But Lewis.
First time he actually got ahead of him.
Yeah. So,
Hamilton A, Bottas B.
Yeah. Okay. Agreed. Cool. So Ferrari, Sebastian Vettel.
C.
It's hard. I would say B because.
Why a B, not a C?
Well, because it didn't have the pace.
It just didn't have the pace and he didn't do much wrong, sort of thing.
Locked up a couple of times to get ahead, but it didn't make any.
He fended off Verstappen really well as well. Yeah, the one bit of overtaking, he did defend quite well, I thought.
Yeah. He probably did as well as Bottas, actually, now I think about it. So, yeah, B.
Yeah.
B?
B.
Let's go for a B. Okay, Charles Leclerc.
C.
I think he
made a mistake in qualifying and he was very unhappy with himself about it.
And he did look slow at the start of the race. I know Vettel didn't pull away, but yeah, I think
the one thing I think I will give him credit for is how magnanimous he was at the in his post-race interviews.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he could have had a complete hissy fit. Like
Verstappen wouldn't have done that.
I didn't want to say it because people would come after me, but you said it for me, Tommy. So, I'm allowed. So there we go. Okay, so what are we saying? A C for Charles?
Yeah,
that is what his name begins with.
C for Charles.
Red Bull, Max Verstappen.
A star. No, I'm joking. B. We did it's nothing like, wrong. He's getting the maximum, no pun intended, out of the car. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's the thing that I'm quite enjoying this year is that he's actually started the season and getting points on the board.
Yeah,
he's third in the championship, isn't he?
You get halfway through the season and there's all those stats that's like, Verstappen is scored the most points out of anyone at the end of the season, but he always bottled the start of the championship. Now he's like in the mix. Yeah, he's doing good. So.
And making moves.
He went for it. He's the only one that was like, this race doesn't have enough overtaking. Lunge.
We were joking that his lunge was the best part of the entire race, and it was a lunge that led to no overtake.
No overtake. And it was clean. He knew it was that was his only moment. I think... B? A?
It's really hard.
Like in between A and B because he didn't do anything that special, but he didn't do anything wrong and it was a really
Go for an A simply because he did try and overtake.
Yeah.
An A. Okay. Gasly.
D, again. He had no pace.
Yeah, like, yeah.
He got fastest lap.
The thing with Gasly is, I think, you know, if he was consistently like 3 or 4 tenths behind, then you could say like, oh yeah, he's struggling a lot. But he's so far behind, it's like there must be some sort of problem with his...
Was it like the Q1, he was like a second off Verstappen? Yeah. Insane, yeah. He needs to pick up his pace. So yeah.
He needs a confidence boosting something.
He needs to take a look at his scorecard because it's not looking very good at the moment. Renault and Daniel Ricciardo.
B?
I can't remember. Did he out-qualify Hülkenberg or not?
Yes,
he did.
Then I'd probably go A.
A. He made a one-stop work, didn't he?
Yeah, like, made a one-stop work.
He had a very lonely race, didn't he?
You just didn't see him. I think we had a few comments that were like, where was Ricciardo?
Yeah. But, you know, he didn't screw up everybody's fantasy tables this time. So there you go. Although I did remove him from my fantasy team.
That's why he did well.
I know. I think that's why. So there you go. I'll leave you off, Daniel, and maybe you'll have a good rest of the season. Nico Hülkenberg. Wasn't a great weekend for him.
I go see, I think. Yeah.
Like, I know the mistake wasn't his fault, like the failure, but he did get out qualified by his teammate.
And he had a bad start as well.
He did. Was it Raikkonen that got him? Raikkonen overtook Hülkenberg at some point. I can't remember which lap it was on now. I did make a note of it, but now I can't find it.
The midfield was really hard to follow, especially because they weren't really showing it either.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to give him a C.
Yeah.
Okay. A team that didn't really turn up at all, Haas.
They seem to have this thing lately where they seem to qualify all right. I know they didn't do that well this weekend.
They get into Q3 though, don't they?
Yeah.
And then they just fall away completely in the race, like really badly.
So Romain Grosjean, let's start with him. What do we give him out?
C?
Well, I'd go for a B because you can't really say out qualified Magnussen because he didn't set a lap in Q3. But, you know, he finished 11th. He was closing on Albon at the end in a car that wasn't that great. I suppose.
C.
I think why? B again. It's like, it's a problem with a really boring race where everyone had really sort of solid drives. It's hard to...
Yeah, there was no real standout person either, was there?
And I guess the same can be said for Magnussen.
Yeah, I'd go C for Magnussen because he got beaten by Grosjean.
All right, so let's move on to the McLaren boys, who we've already kind of touched on and didn't have a great race. Carlos Sainz.
This is so hard to...
Yeah.
It's really tough to be honest, rate them.
I was reasonably impressed that he got to the end. He beat Giovinazzi, I think, in the end, didn't
he?
So after that first lap, he did sort of get back into it.
It's a bit of a shame because I think Sainz has shown some good pace, and obviously he had the mare in Bahrain as well. Yeah. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing how he does in Baku.
He needs a clean weekend.
Yeah, he needs a clean race.
Because it looks like we were touched on this in the last podcast as well. He looks like he's got everything there to actually really take it to the midfield and kind of bring McLaren right up there, but just hasn't had a clean weekend. I think he was, although we're going to say it's a racing incident, he was partly to blame for that collision, so I don't think I can give him anything higher than a C.
It's really hard not to just rate all the midfield to C when you don't really see them.
True.
Yeah.
See them. And what about Lando?
Probably
same.
Same.
This is the thing, like, there was nothing of note, so it was really hard to rate people.
Yeah, C's for McLaren.
Perez.
Yeah. A.
Perez.
He was really good.
He was my driver of the weekend.
Oh, really? Albon?
No, because of Albon's crash, I don't think you can give him driver of the weekend.
Yeah, that's true. I would agree.
But yeah, Perez was very impressive.
He qualified reasonably well for
there. He made a one-stop work, qualified well. I know his teammate isn't doing that well.
Awesome start.
Yeah, awesome start. And... you know,
he was hounding Ricciardo for most of the race, to be honest. Yeah. And I don't think the racing point
at,
is...
At the start, you were like, oh, right, Perez is right up there, like, challenging. Yeah, yeah. That's pretty impressive.
Lance Stroll, then, his teammate.
D?
Yeah, it just...
You didn't see him the whole race again. I don't.
Yeah. Okay. If you told me he failed to start, I probably wouldn't believe you.
I think D, just because he got so... He was so lost compared to his teammate's performance.
Okay.
So
let's go that. Let's do that, then. Yeah. Alfa Romeo and Kimi Raikkonen. Had a decent race.
I was going to say A. He's doing really well this season.
He's doing well. He's impressed me a lot.
Him and Albon were
seventh in the title.
Yeah.
Only just been overtaken by Gasly in a Red Bull in the championship, which is pretty impressive for a team that were last in the Constructors' Championship like 2 years ago.
So A?
A. I give him an A. Yeah, nice. he's doing a solid job.
Okay. Giovinazzi.
Was he in the race?
He's becoming like a bit like Esteban Gutierrez for me, where he does okay, but he's just not really there in the mix. I kind of hope he does because I think he's a quick driver. But
analogies, he's a bit of an Esteban Gutierrez.
Okay, so what are we giving him?
An Esteban Gutierrez. That's what we're giving him.
No. I need an A, B, C, D, E, or F. Oh, no, there's no E.
A, B, C, D, Esteban Gutierrez.
No. Come on now, guys. What are we giving him as a grade?
C.
A C. I reckon a D.
I think D, to be honest, okay, yeah.
You were so easy to convince.
No, go for a C because he didn't get to run at all in qualifying, so he did have to start from the back.
And that wasn't his fault.
No.
Okay, all right. So, Toro Rosso and Torpedo.
D.
He qualified well.
I do think he was partly to blame.
I think he was mostly to blame.
It was harsh on his thing, but he got...
I think a D, to be honest.
Okay.
Especially when Gasly's seemingly under pressure and he needs to be...
Yeah, because a lot of people thought, people were making their bold predictions at the start of the year, and I saw a few that were like, Kvyat will replace Gasly.
Yeah.
Because you'd think if someone was going to, it would be him because he's experienced and knows the team. But I mean,
how could that happen though? Could you imagine? Yeah.
That would be crazy.
It'd be a PR nightmare.
But it would give them an excuse to demote him again and therefore give Verstappen wins.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's give him a D then. Alex Albon.
B.
Yeah.
I think a B.
Yeah.
Just because of his crash.
Just because of that crash.
He did.
But congrats.
Really good drive and awesome.
To getting up to P10.
Awesome drive.
This is the most difficult team to grade out of them all. Williams, George Russell, out-qualified his teammate.
He was in the mix at one point.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned like he was 12th, and I looked at the screen and I did the kind of like,
oh,
excuse me, what? How is he 12th?
Do you know what that reminded me of when I saw that? Like when in the early 2010s, when there would be pit stops and you'd be like, oh, look, Carter Kane's ninth in a HRT.
Yeah.
And it's sad that we're saying that about Williams now. Like, look how high up they are.
George also did a two-stop race and Robert did a one-stop and George still finished in front.
Mm.
not
that's
not
difficult
so
though, because there's all
Robert.
These things about Kubica's car is damaged and it's not as, it's still like the testing chassis, it's not as good as George's, so it's
Yeah, I heard that conspiracy theory, whether it's legit or not.
Yeah.
So what are we going to give the boys? Because we have to give them something.
C and a D for Kubica.
C. So C for Russell, D for Kubica.
I'll take B and C, because I think they need to.
They're almost in their own little special class. Yeah. You know, the kids that get kind of taken off to their own, like, extra schooling bits. That's kind of where Williams is at the moment. So that's all the grading for the weekend. Now, let's reflect on the predictions that we had. And I think Matty's going to be pretty upset.
It's a good job he's not here.
Yeah. I know,
that
right?
That first prediction is bold.
So Matty's first prediction was the race will have more than 100 overtakes.
We had one?
Incorrect. Are we counting on track or pit lane? This was something we didn't...
How many overtakes were there?
I mean...
Maybe he meant 1.00 overtakes and you missed the point. Maybe that's what he was going for.
Either way...
Half a point. No.
Either way, it was never going to be 100.
Yeah.
This one, interestingly, it will be another scintillating race for strategy with one or two stops both being viable.
That is half a point.
Because...
It's half a point.
It wasn't scintillating... But teams had to switch up strategies based on it.
I think that's why the race was disappointing, because you did have one or two stops.
But it made no difference,
and that was...
Yeah.
Why do we think that is, then?
I think there was enough gaps between the teams where someone pitted, and then everyone could pit to cover them
also,
off.
Also, I've never seen a race in China where DRS didn't work.
Yeah, that was
normally
really, really
it's too
weird.
Strong. Like, Vettel was within DRS every lap of Charles before he got... passed, and he couldn't get close.
No.
Really weird.
Shame. Okay, so Dan's first prediction was the race will be outrageously boring.
I'm so sorry.
You jinxed it.
I did.
So that is actually 1 point. And you also said that Gasly would beat Max, and that definitely didn't happen.
No.
So
you got one out of two.
One out of two ain't bad. My predictions were Grosjean will DNF. Didn't happen. Good for Grosjean. And Bottas will try a dive bomb overtake, but I don't think that happened either.
No.
So there we go. Fan predictions. Hulkenberg on the podium. Definitely
that was bold.
Not. At John Dibble, only one Williams will be on the back row. Neither of them were on the back row, technically.
Yeah, wrong.
So it's wrong. Sorry.
So still wrong.
Actually.
Half point.
Because Kubica's a span, didn't he have to start at the back and not resume his position? I don't know if he did or not.
Did he? Because the rule is, as long as you don't drop.
Yeah, because Max didn't. Because Max dropped behind Gasly.
But I'm guessing Kubica would have dropped behind, right? So he would have to start from the back.
Maybe. Yeah.
We'll have to rewatch
Albon,
it.
Yeah. Albon started from the pit lane.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, this is getting too complicated.
Depending on your definition of back row.
Let's just give him half a point. And at Chris J. Kimber says Ferraris will take each other out.
For dinner?
Yeah. No, not even that.
I mean, they didn't take each other out, but they did ruin each other's strategies.
They took each other out of the equation, yeah.
So completely the opposite.
Okay, so now we're looking ahead to Baku.
Yay.
Crazy Baku.
Yeah.
Tommy, what are your predictions for Baku?
That it better damn well be crazy. My predictions are Sainz will finish ahead of Gasly on pace. I feel like this will be where Sainz has... really strong race. He was good last year.
The one race where everybody literally crashes into everybody else, and you think Sainz is going to have... This is going to be his
clean
weekend.
This is going to be his one. Well, he did all right last year, didn't he? Did he get fifth last year?
He did, actually. Yeah. Sainz was... he was one of my top drivers of the weekend at Baku last year.
It's Hülkenberg that crashes every time at Baku, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, sorry.
You're trying to steal Dan's prediction.
Ricardo will say, well done, Baku, in an interview.
I mean, probably a lot of interviews.
That's
a guarantee.
I just wanted a point. Okay. It's been a while.
That was too easy.
A race will happen.
Yeah, Dan.
The race will be in Baku.
Dan, what were your two predictions?
Well, as Tommy's already spoiled, I think Hülkenberg will bin it in the race for a third year in a row.
That's harsh, but probably true.
and
your second prediction?
We'll see a car upside down at some point over the weekend.
I mean,
two for one.
efficient predictions there if that comes true. So my predictions were there will be more than two safety cars. I think last year we had
two or three. There was two.
And kind of related to that is that there will be more safety car shenanigans. So something Interesting.
Like an Ericsson's fault moment again.
Like an Ericsson's fault moment, or a Vettel sideswiping Hamilton, or whatever it might be. But something, whilst the safety car is running,
two cars stop and they have a fist fight.
Exactly that. Yeah. I mean, that's why I've kind of left it open-ended.
Okay.
Anything.
You're just kind of cheating.
I just want a point.
Really general.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want a point. So fan predictions. At ZP Scissors says... red flag because someone crashes in the castle section and completely blocks it.
Is that where someone ends up upside down?
It could be.
Hoffenberg.
Oh my gosh. At Borvanik 1, a non-top three team will score a podium.
If it's going to happen anywhere, it's going to be Baku.
Yeah. And at Susie_97_, Ferrari team orders round 4. I mean,
I can see that happening.
Yeah,
let's
hope
not, but... I mean,
probably will.
Yeah.
They're just always trying to be on the same part of the track as each other, and it is a headache for Ferrari.
Yeah, completely. But so that brings us to the end of the podcast. Hope you've enjoyed listening. I hope we gave some commentary over a race that where a lot didn't really happen.
I was saying it's normally we have so many things to cover that we worry about missing stuff, whereas at least we could expand a little more on the two things that happened during the race.
One thing we didn't talk about was the Mercedes double pit.
That was impressive. They're just...
Why are we talking about this at the end of the podcast? Like, when we had nothing to talk about, why are we talking about it now? But there we go.
They're just too good at the moment. It's quite annoying.
But good to see that they actually learned from last year, because famously last year was where the Red Bulls double stacked. And
they were just showing off, weren't they?
Well, I don't know if they were, because that was quite risky. Like, it was quite risky to bring both the top two drivers in like that.
Yeah.
But it covered off the potential undercut there, so.
Yeah, they had the space to do it, so
why not?
Why not?
They've got to challenge themselves somehow.
There you go, Mercedes. Last minute nod to your double stack pit stop. But that's it. That's all from us. Next time, we will be hopefully in Baku. We'll definitely be there. We just don't know if we're going to film the podcast there or not, so we'll see what happens. Thanks ever so much for watching, listening. Get involved in the conversation. If you're watching on YouTube, comments down below. If you're listening on an audio platform, make sure you tweet us or Instagram DM us, however you want to reach out. If you agree with us, don't agree with us. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please do leave us a rating. It helps us a lot and get more people listening to the podcast. So do that. Give us a thumbs up.
And well done for you for being a presenter.
I know. I'm definitely like, Matty can come back next time.
Link
in description.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. All that YouTube jazz.
Hit the bell icon.
You did well.
But there we go. Hope you've lasted this long into the podcast, and that'd be a good sign for me. But that's it from us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Ta-ra.
Well done, Becky.